Steve Scruton.
This is BBC Essex.
A very special and poignant anniversary today. Many books and films have been written about Canada's worst maritime disaster, but none tell the story of the Chelmsford man who sent the crucial SOS in the early hours of the 29th of May 1914 in the St Lawrence River, which contributed to saving many hundreds of lives. We hear that story from our next guest, John Bowen, who joins me after Gilbert O'Sullivan. Coming up to 4:10, BBC Essex, Steve Scruton for Ray Clark, here until 5, then of course Ian Puckey takes you, your drive home through until 7. A very special story now, a very poignant story, told by my next guest, joining me in the studio to tell it, John Bowen's here, who's had a very busy day, because it was 100 years ago this very day that one of the world's worst maritime disasters took place. We talk often about the Titanic. Not so often do we talk about the RMS Empress of Ireland. And in fact, on that ship, I think more passengers died this day than passengers on the Titanic, which makes it a very important sea disaster. First, before you tell the story, John, good afternoon. Good to speak to you.
Good afternoon.
You've been a very busy boy today because you've been broadcasting to the world from your radio transmitters down at Sandford Mill.
Yes, thanks to Dr. Jeff Bowles, who's the keeper of the Sandford Mill Museum. We've been transmitting to the world to promote Marconi and to tell the people about the disaster, as you so rightly said.
The man who did much to help save the lives of many of the passengers and crew aboard that ship was the radio operator. I think that was he the second or first radio operator?
No, he was the first radio operator.
First radio operator.
Yes, 20 years old.
From Essex, from Chelmsford.
Essex, from Chelmsford. Lived all his life in Chelmsford.
Just 20 years old.
Yes.
And in those days, I mean, we think about radio communication now, and we just think of it, take it as second nature. I mean, it's something that just happens. We don't have to think about how it happens. It's just there. Flick of a switch, we hear the radio. In those days, these were pioneering days for radio, weren't they?
Yes, indeed. But it was 2 years after the Titanic disaster, and the international maritime requirement was that there should be 24-hour wireless watch on every passenger ship.
Now, tell me a bit about wireless in those days, because it was, I think it was Morse code rather than spoken word, wasn't
it? Oh, absolutely. Morse code will get through when spoken word wasn't. But in those days, there was no spoken word.
It was just dot, 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 dash,
yes,
dash,
indeed.
Dash.
Yes, and our contact today with Antarctica was by Morse code.
Was it?
We wouldn't have been able to have made the contact using voice.
I don't want to get too technical, but the way that you transmit such vast distances and the way that the ships managed it, even way back then, was using very different frequencies, perhaps, to the kinds of frequencies that we tend to use these days. Yeah. It's more medium wave, AM, long wave type frequencies, isn't it?
Yes, indeed, yes.
And some short wave, I think.
Yes.
That's how you bounce your signals around the world, isn't
yes.
it?
Yes, yes.
And that's why you can't hear BBC Essex in Australia. Because we use FM and very low-power medium-wave transmitters.
Yes,
but that's about as technical as we're going to get. Yes. The thing is, that signal, that Mayday signal that he sent from the ship, did save lives.
Yes, indeed, yes.
Tell me the story of that day and what happened.
Well, the Empress of Ireland set sail from Quebec at 4:30, loaded with 1,000 tons of cargo, 252 ingots of silver, about £1 million thereabouts in this day.
A lot of money.
And 2,000 tons of coal for the journey, and 1,477 passengers, of which 167 were from the Salvation Army, including the Toronto Staff Band. So they set sail at 4:30, and the band played God Be With You Until We Meet Again, which is the Salvation Army's equivalent of Auld Lang Syne. And you can imagine the emotion of 1,000 people singing along with the band. So it set sail, and the band actually played later on in the evening to the entertainment of the passengers. It was a very, very hot evening, 30 degrees centigrade, and everybody was told to shut their portholes. But, of course, they didn't.
Because it was too hot.
It was
too
hot.
Why were they told to shut the portholes? Was that standard procedure?
International requirement.
So close the portholes when at sea because it's safer.
Yes,
but they didn't bother because they were too hot.
And they didn't have air conditioning like we have today.
No. So it would have been quite stuffy below decks.
So it set sail quite happily. At 1:20 in the morning, the pilot got off the boat at a place called Father Point, 1 mile from Father Point into a boat. And Captain Kendall, who is our star, said, full steam ahead. This is the first command that he has had of this ship. It was a 90-second trip that it was making across the Atlantic, and 166,000 emigres would have used it to actually get to Canada from England.
So it was a well-used ship. 92 voyages so far, yes, across the Atlantic. So, yes, you know, the crew and the ship and everything, they knew what they were doing.
Oh, absolutely. They'd done it 92 times before.
Yep. So what went wrong?
Well, the St. Lawrence at the Father Point is wider than the English Channel. It's 25 miles across. And traditionally, the Empress of Ireland would have been on the left-hand side. So he would have been like 20 miles away from Father Point. So what he did was he deviated, as he had done many, many times before, to be only a mile from Father Point, so the pilot could get off happily into his boat and get ashore. This meant that he was cutting really across anybody coming upstream. Soon after he'd given the command, all steam ahead, the lookout saw the ship coming upwards, and that was a collier made in England, and it had 10,000 tons of coal on it to be delivered to Montreal.
Now, this was dark. It was
pitch black,
so the lookout wouldn't have seen the ship until quite late on.
Well, 8 miles away, in fact.
Really?
8 miles away.
Oh, so the lights were bright enough to be spotted, miles.
But as soon as that had happened, a huge fog bank descended. We've got the high temperature from the previous day, we've got the very cold river, and as we all know, we get a fog.
Yep.
And it's a very, very thick fog. And as everybody knows, when you've been in a thick fog, everything is confused.
Yeah,
sound is confused, sight is confused, and unfortunately, out of the fog, the ship is struck midships. It makes a hole 27 foot long below the waterline, and 60,000 gallons of water a minute pour in.
I imagine it wasn't long before the ship started to list over.
And of course, that's where the problem with the portholes came, because the portholes were open and more water poured in.
When was the radio, the Mayday radio signal sent then? Well, at the moment of impact?
The number two, Edward Bamford, is on duty, because traditionally throughout the world, the number one is asleep after midnight. So the number two feels the impact, and he sees a flash of light, and at that moment, the number one, the man in our story, Ron Ferguson, comes in his pyjamas.
This is our Chelmsford man.
And says, "What was that?" Edward says, "I don't know, but we've hit something." So Ron tells Edward, "Go to the bridge to get instructions." So Edward disappears. Ron settles down at the transmitter and transmits CQ, which is all stations listen. "This is the Empress of Ireland. We have struck something. Stand by for a disaster message." And the idea for sending it slowly was that it was going to be heard by the number two, who hopefully will get his number one out of bed, and then Ron could talk turkey.
Get things moving.
Edward comes back from the bridge and says, "Chief Officer says, send the SOS. So Ron sends the SOS, which is now received at Father Point by the number one. The number one says, "Where are you?" Ron was not given a latitude and longitude, so he says, 20 miles past Rimorski. So number one at Father Point says, "Okay, send in the Eureka and the Lady Evelyn to your assistance." Two ships. And Ron says, "Thank you very much." Goes outside the radio room and says to everybody, "Help is coming. Help is coming." Goes back inside. By now, he's asked Edward to produce his clothes to change into his pyjamas. And with that, the power goes off. The ship is leaning so greatly Ron thinks, what I can do is get the emergency transmitter going, but the cupboard that contains it bursts open and the batteries fall on him, so he can do no more. With that, a wave washes him out of the wireless room into the sea.
But the message, the SOS message, had been received.
And the two rescue ships were launched, sent on their way.
Had that message not have gone, I think, well, it's fairly safe to assume that everybody would have lost their lives.
50 years later, Ron, in a Marconi document, said that he thought that instead of the 465 being saved, more than likely it would have been 40 to 50.
There's more to this man, though, because he came back... survived the disaster, came back to work in Chelmsford for Marconi, and was instrumental, I think, in setting up the BBC.
Yes, indeed. Ron went after this event to World War One, and that was the problem with this story. It was eclipsed by World War One.
Yes, 1914.
Yeah, 1,012 people died on the Empress. And as you said in your introduction, 840 passengers died, whereas on the Titanic it was 807 passengers. But of course there were a lot more people on the Titanic, a part of the crew. Mm. Most of the crew for the Empress were actually on deck tidying up the ship, having left port the previous day. So they were saved. There were 138 children on the Empress, only four survived. Out of the 167 Salvation Armyists, only eight survived.
It's a disaster story, but thanks to Ronald Ferguson, a lot of people owe their lives to him. And, of course, his pioneering work with radio, with Marconi,
yes,
became very famous in Essex and indeed in Chelmsford.
Yes, indeed.
It's a wonderful story to hear. It's good that that he managed to survive, Ronald Ferguson managed to survive and tell the tale, and John... Congratulations on telling the tale to the rest of the world today through your amateur radio hat and, yes, and your work over at Sandford Mill. I know you're going to try and get back there to make your final Morse messages before the day closes. Been great to meet you, John.
Righto. Thank you very much, and thank you very much for promoting Marconi.
And the Chelmsford Amateur Radio Society. And, John, I think you are the vice chairman?
A vice president.
A vice president. That's good enough for me. Good to meet you. Thanks for coming in. 21 minutes past four.
Essex Travel.
Here's Barry Lewis.
Thanks very much, Steve. At Braintree, accused...